say health cannot have vibes, well, Jolly's Pharmacy is proving you otherwise. With health vibes, every Wednesday morning on Q95 from 10 a.m. to 11:30. Health vibes, education, information, and a bit of humor. And not forgetting, lots of vibes. Hosted by Carlton Lando, with co-hosts Jacinta Fagan-Defo and Trudy Kristen. Jolly's Pharmacy is bringing health and vibes together every Wednesday, so be sure to tune in. Every Wednesday on Q95 from 10 a.m. to 11:30. Jolly's Pharmacy, leading the way in healthcare.
Indeed, we are leading the way in healthcare. Good morning to you from Jolly's Pharmacy. Good morning. We are so happy that you've joined us for yet another episode of Health Vibes, your very own. And I say that it's your own. You own it. You own Health Vibes. We are just facilitating the product, but you are the one that buy into the product. You purchase that product every Wednesday when you listen and you take the advice that we give. It is a very humid day on the outside, Trudy, and I'm seeing you in black today.
Yes. I don't know, Carlton. If I had to
you
dress,
you know what to iron this morning.
If I had to dress how I felt, you know, it would cause problems as usual. So, I mean, I just have to take my licks and and try to dress, you know, for coming into studio. But I had a meeting this morning, actually.
Yeah.
So that's why I had to be a little, you know,
because I know you're on holiday.
I'm on holiday. But yeah. I had a meeting, yes. But Carlton, good morning. Good morning, of course, to all our listeners of Health Vibes. It is a pleasure to be on again this morning with you.
Yes, man. I left home a little after 9, and the place is just humid.
Yeah.
I was so happy when I just, you know, when I got into the studio, I looked at Slim, I sighed, and I like...
That AC was hitting.
Oh my God. Yes. Thank God for AC. Whoever invented AC, thank you. Yeah. Yes. But Trudy, we have a very interesting show this morning.
Yeah.
But before we get to that, I want to share some very good news. You know that we are always working on stuff. We're always working on stuff. I mean, you work closely with us too. And you know, we're always up to something. The month of September is Caribbean Wellness Month. It is a month that is set aside where Caribbean people can focus more on their general health and wellness. The governments of the Caribbean came together a couple of years ago and actually ratified this and recognized how, you know, in a sense, dangerously, and I'll use the word in inverted commas, the CNCDs are affecting our life mortality, or health quality, and our mortality rates.
Life quality.
You know, most of our people are dying from a complication of a chronic non-communicable disease. Hence the reason why Caribbean Wellness Month was born, and at that time, communities are advised to mobilize people and really do more activities that will actually promote
good health,
general health and wellness practices. This year, we will be doing that, and like we've done every year. And this year, I'm currently planning a sexual and reproductive health symposium. It is a symposium that I've recognized we really need to have that discussion. There we would have mentioned it some time ago, but the culture from a sociological perspective of sex in the world is revolving, it's changing, it's a paradigm shift, you know, and there are a lot of ambiguities, there are a lot of questions, there are a lot of stigmatization, yes, prejudice, misconceptions as it relates to that sort of sexual mobilization that is happening in the world. And hence the reason why I have decided to put the symposium together. I'm still working on it. It is going to be called Let's Sex It Up. Let Us Sex It Up. And it is one that is going to be very detailed. So we'll be having on the panel a urologist, that is a doctor that deals with the male reproductive system. We'll have an OBGYN, a gynecologist obstetrician, that will be dealing with matters of the female sexual and reproductive system. We'll be having a sociologist that will cover the social aspect and all the perspective, the social perspective relating to sexuality, sex, and culture. And even to the point how religion has impacted our ideologies
and or
perceptions
of
sex. And then the last one will be on the that will be the last person that will be on the panel will be a psychologist that will deal with the the psychological aspects of sex and sexual disorders and conditions and issue. It is going to be a no holds barred symposium. We will be targeting adult population, preferably. I would love to see couples, married couples, common law couples, or if you're in a relationship with someone, and we are not discriminating the relationship. We're not saying that it's only for heterosexual people, and that is where the no holds barred of this discussion is going to be about. We do not have an agenda. So a lot of times when you, you go down this kind of roads, people are so myopic in their thinking, and they always think that you're trying to push an agenda. It's nothing about an agenda. It's about expanding your thoughts, your knowledge about sex and everything relating to sex.
Yeah, Carlton, I love this idea. I really, I mean, I want you, it's the first time I'm hearing about it from you. I want us to discuss it later because it's something I am very interested in and would love to be a part of as well. And Carlton, information is power. So anytime you have something like this, which will empower people, the benefits will be exponential. You know, people will benefit in terms of the way they can manage their health, because sex is directly related to our overall emotional and physical health as well. So, you know, I would hope that no one would feel the inclusivity that you mentioned, you know, that other, every type of couple can attend, is some sort of agenda pushing, because information is power. Everybody needs and will benefit from information like what you're describing. So it's I must commend you this idea. I'm loving it. I'm loving it. And when the details become concrete, I will definitely encourage people to participate.
Definitely. We're still working on the nitty-gritty of it because, again, the symposium will be a paid symposium. So therefore, you will have to buy a ticket
to
attend the symposium. It's not going to be a washy-washy thing. We, as at Jolly's, we do everything professional. The content, you would have heard the panelists that we're putting together. They are all hardcore professional people, and we will be having that discussion. We are advising pastors to tell their church members to come, because believe it or not, many couples in the church are suffering sexually. Believe it or not, because I have been doing a lot of work in the background relating to this, and I have been to quite a number of places doing public health education. I was recently at a church, and I was brought in there to do a public health education on men's health, and truly, to be honest with you, we got to slide two.
Wow.
There were 27 slides, and we got to slide two. The conversation went on focusing on sex in the marriage and in the family. And there were so many
questions
and issues that were raised. And I recognize for a fact how, some way, somehow, religion, and I didn't say spirituality, how religion and beliefs has some way somehow impacted the way that we behave sexually, and how some way somehow it has put a damper on many, many relationships. So people are married and they become just friends. So it's like, we just friends. It's like there is no intimacy. There is still a lot of barriers. And so everybody goes to church and we walk together and we do the scriptures and thing. And then we get home and there is the tension. So we're going to be talking all about these things at this symposium. I will announce the date. I will let you know the price of the ticket once we've finalized everything. But I can tell you, Slim is smiling because I know he's going to be there. And my good friend Mervyn, I know he is going to be there. And most likely Carly John Baptist will be there as well. These are good friends of mine. And we want them to be there. And we want us. We will be having sex toys, all the different sex toys too that are available. We'll be talking about that. The expert will be showing you if you have interest in this thing. So it's going to be a no holds bad. You recognize that I'm a no holds bad person. If you give me the forum, if you give me a nightly show, you know it's going to be buzzing. So we're going to have those discussions. I have not told Trudy yet, but both of us will be moderating the discussion. And so we will definitely ensure that when you pay your ticket to come to the symposium, you will get your money's worth. We're looking at about 3 hours for the symposium, presentation for about 2 hours, and then answering questions. Yeah. But you know when you see is that... It might be, but we're looking at a window period of about 3 hours. So that's the big buzz.
And Carlton, I suspect when this goes off, this will be part one. I suspect that there will be calls for a part two and a part three, because, you know, sometimes people are so afraid to have these discussions, but when they get the the proper opportunity, the right environment, the you know, and they are able to express themselves, they crave more.
That's true.
So I suspect, I'm saying it early, people will ask you for a part two, a pure part three, and a part four. So I'm putting that out there already.
Definitely. And I know, Trudy, you have a large platform with all your female listeners because you do a lot of work in
women's
female
health,
you know, health. And so I know they ask you plenty of questions too. So it's a good time for you to begin to, you know, promote it and tell them that this symposium is happening very, very soon. And we will be letting you know of the panelists by name and what, you know, but I know for a fact we will be having a really very interesting conversation. And I am excited about it, and I am putting all of my energies right now in ensuring that this symposium is an amazing one. So it is now 10:30. What we are going to do, we're going to take a short break. But today we are discussing popular medical myths that are totally untrue. So you might be like, well, it's the rain that give me the cold. I will take dew, and since after that, I get the cold. Is that true or is that false? So we're going to look at some of those myths that are totally untrue when written.
Who say health cannot have vibes? Well, Jolly's Pharmacy is proving you otherwise. With Health Vibes, every Wednesday morning on Q95 from 10 a.m. to 11:30. Health Vibes, education, information, and a bit of humor. And not forgetting, lots of vibes. Hosted by Carlton Langdo, with co-hosts Jacinta Fagan-Defoe and Trudy Kristen. Jolly's Pharmacy is bringing health and vibes together every Wednesday, so be sure to tune in. Every Wednesday on Q95 from 10 a.m. to 11:30. Jolly's Pharmacy, leading the way in healthcare.
woke up this morning feeling real stink. I had the intentions to call in sick, but I end up in Jolly's pharmacy. Great and down Kinga Street, Jolly's fixed up my immune system. Got me feeling fit and strong, now I'm ready to work and take on any mission. If you see me walking, Jolly's pharmacy is number one. Jolly's walking, we cater for everyone. Jolly's walking, boost up your immune system. Jolly's walking, yeah. Dominicus, if I fought a box, whenever I'm in town and I'm feeling down, I head to Jolly's Pharmacy, they boost me up real quick. Jolly's Pharmacy, leading the way in healthcare.
And we are back with you. Of course, we are here, another episode of Health Vibes, and we have a very, very, very interesting topic lined up. As usual, you know, you can always depend on us for that. So many, many times we hear things and we practice things that we have heard because this is what we were told, and you know this culture that we have here. He say that, she say that, and he and she somehow becomes the authority. So we are going to talk today about some very popular medical myths that are untrue, things that you maybe hold as gospel truth, and that you base your practices on this myth. And it is totally untrue. Carlton, I know you have quite a few of them lined up. I have a few as well. And I'm sure there are also listeners who have some in their minds as well, things they've heard, and they maybe are not sure. Is this one of those myths? And maybe just this discussion will start allowing them to question, what is the fact behind this thing that I've always heard and I've always just done because I hear Dominicans say that's what it is, you know? So they might also be encouraged to call, you know, and let us know what they have been taught is a medical fact. So Carlton, I know you're raring to go with some of these myths that are widely spread here locally and abroad too.
You know, Trudy, when we met, I said to you, Trudy, tomorrow we're going to have something spontaneous. I don't know what we're going to talk about, but I will call you later. Uh-huh. And then when I got home, I said, you know, I just thought of something. I said, but there are so many myths that people believe medically that are true, and they're really not true. Because as a pharmacist for over 24 years, I've heard it so many times.
I can imagine.
You know, people tell you that this is happening to them and they sure is a gas that in their foot.
Right.
You know, and all these things. And sometimes it's so difficult to re-educate them, and because they're convinced no matter what, is a gas
and,
that there.
And that is the issue too, is the lack of willingness sometimes for them to accept the correct information because of how strongly this wrong information has been embedded, you know, culture. In their psyche. Yes. Yeah. So it's a challenge. But I have had to do a lot of re-education as a teacher. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, me teaching biology, the students come with all sorts of myths themselves.
Yes.
So I used to, for instance, anytime I would start the male and female reproductive system as a topic in bio, I would have to start dispelling myths. Black is white. I mean, and at such a young age, my students are 17, 18 years old. They have these things ingrained in them already that, you know, this is what it is. And, you know, simple things, silly things, you know, things like, for instance, if you standing up, this is one of those early ones I used to hear. If you have sex standing up, it will make you not be able to get pregnant. Yes. You cannot get pregnant from, you know, stand. These people will have these things in their minds. If you have sex in water, you cannot get pregnant.
Yes.
So especially as it related to sexual and reproductive health among teenagers, the myths were rampant. You know, they say rampant. Yes, the myths were definitely rampant. So this is a good idea, Carlton. You know, let's talk about some of these common myths.
Definitely. So myth number one, and you know, you can't get pregnant if you're on your period. And that's one that many people believe that you cannot get pregnant if you are on your period.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is yes, you can get pregnant whilst you are on your period.
Yes.
The probability
is low.
Is much lesser.
Mm-hmm.
But it can happen. So according to the American Pregnancy Association, this is not true. The association website explains that while this is a rare occurrence, if the woman has a shorter than typical cycle and the ovary of the ovaries early, a pregnancy can definitely happen. It's all about timing.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly, sperm can remain viable in a woman's reproductive system for up to 5 days. Mm-hmm. They're saying up to 5 days. Therefore, if the woman has sex near the end of her period, and if ovulation happens within 5 days after that encounter, it's possible that those little swimmers, what we call sperm,
mm-hmm.
can still be there waiting to fertilize that egg.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is rare, but it has happened. I met a lady who, she has, I think she had about 7 children, and they were really, really close. And she said to me that all the children, most of them, she was on birth control.
Mm.
And she still got pregnant. She still got pregnant, and she would be pregnant and don't even know she's pregnant until late.
So sometimes the efficacy of that method that she was using was poor, or she was not, you know, maybe adhering properly to the method,
yes.
You know, so those things do happen. Carlton, and that thing about the period, having your period and still being able to get pregnant is something, it might scare some people,
yes.
But you did highlight that it is real.
Yes.
And knowledge of a female's reproductive or menstrual cycle is so important. So if you, as a woman, know that your cycle is, as you mentioned, short or possibly irregular, you do not know how to count and decipher when you are ovulating, then you have to be cautious. That is if you don't want to get pregnant.
Yes.
You have to be cautious, you know, at all times. So even if you are, you know, experiencing a menstrual period, you still want to use protection if pregnancy is not your goal.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a lot of myths surrounding having sex during a period.
Yeah.
That is another thing.
That's another
thing. You know, but the pregnancy aspect is definitely true. And there's a follow-up one, Carlton, I just want to interject with this, is that if you're breastfeeding, you absolutely cannot get pregnant. This
false.
Is also false.
That's false.
So as you mentioned, yes. Some women with children back to back to back, sometimes this is what happens.
That's true.
So the woman mm-hmm. has had a baby, she's breastfeeding. It is a myth that if you're breastfeeding, you will not get pregnant. Your cycle has not resumed. So you go and you have sex.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, you have what they call Irish twins. You know, children born within the same 12-month
yes,
period.
Yes.
So people literally have children 9-10 months apart.
Mm-hmm.
And they call these children Irish twins because in the same calendar mm-hmm. you had 2 children.
Mm-hmm. And that has happened quite a bit
mm-hmm,
too.
Mm-hmm,
that has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that we're discussing this because for many people who listen to our show, I'm sure that some of them are quite bewildered or shocked with the findings and the answers that we're given, that so far we've had 2 false,
mm-hmm.
right? The statements are false.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that's quite debatable is 8 glasses of water in a day necessary for good health?
Ah.
I have done quite a bit of reading on this, and there have been so many different perspectives on it. I was reading from, I was looking at a blog from a clinical pharmacist who said that we should drink water only when necessary. The body will tell you when to drink water and the amount of water that it requires. And there are some watchers that say we should be drinking more water. I think just about a few years ago, there was this water crave and everybody began walking
to work with this
big bottle of water.
Yes.
And now there has been some new developments about this. So it's a bit confusing about water. But according to the Mayo Clinic, this statement is unknowable. And you should drink whenever you're thirsty. Mm-hmm. That's what the scientists are saying. The website goes on to explain that while water has an important role to play in the smooth functioning of our bodies, the exact amount needed on any given day can vary widely.
Yes.
Sometimes you will need way more water, like if it's a hot day like today,
mm-hmm.
compared to when it's raining. Or if you're working in AC, you will find that you don't feel thirsty,
mm-hmm.
Because the temperature also affects your
water levels. Yeah. When it's hot, you're losing water for sweating.
That's it.
So, you know, you tend to need to replenish that water loss by drinking more water. If it is cooler, you're not losing that amount of water for sweating, so you might not feel thirsty and you may not require the same quantity of water. I had a discussion just yesterday with somebody in a spa. She was talking about hydration and she mentioned, you know, even if, like for me, I work in an AC office, yes. AC, that, you know, I should still be drinking. I explained that I don't feel thirsty when I'm at work.
Yes.
And I know drinking water is important, but really and truly listening to your body is also key. So yes. If you're not very thirsty, my belief, and you mentioned that you know the researchers are pointing to that, is that you if you're not very thirsty, you're not going to drink water, and you're not going to force it as well, because there are actually implications to drinking too much water. That's what that's another aspect of this conversation. There are implications of drinking too much water. You can actually
It can actually raise your blood pressure.
Right, right.
It can raise your blood pressure. If you look at in the treatment of hypertension, generally the first line of treatment that is given are diuretics. And they basically water pill that helps to get rid of excess water in your body. So there is a lot of conversations about it that it might, if you drink too much water, it can actually increase the sodium levels in the body as well. And so water dilutes can also dilute the plasma in your blood, in the blood vessels, and so therefore increasing the effects of the synthetic nerves. So there is a lot of issues, there are a lot of a lot of components or variations in terms of this. And I again too, the amount of water we drink is also based on what we eat.
Right.
So if you eat something very salty, you may find that your body is going to require more water.
Right.
Sweet too. If you drink something very sweet,
you may
find
water.
That you want to drink more water. So if you're really eating healthily, you would recognize that the amount of water your body is requiring may vary as well.
Right. And our body also obtains water from foods as well.
That's true.
So if you're eating, for instance, you know, watermelon, the water content of that would That's also true. Contribute to your water needs of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just the, you know, the pure water that you may drink. And Carlton, your activity levels as well.
That's
if
true.
You are a very active person, then you would require more hydration. If you are a very, if you're a sedentary type person, the amount of water that you may, you know, require for you to maintain your daily activity may be lower, you know. So the person that's doing construction as compared to the person who is sitting in an office, they might have different water needs every day.
As well to your body size.
And the size.
Right, yes, your body size. If you're bigger you are, the more you may require more water. Mm-hmm. So I do hope so far you've been taking notes, and we do have you know, listeners who have their notebook and they take notes from time to time. There is another very popular one, and I grew up in my time hearing about that one, that milk is very good if you have ulcer. So if your stomach bothering you, you drink a cup of hot milk. Okay. You know, even in my time, when the cow milk, the pure cow milk was very popular, and that was very fresh. Eh? And oftentimes it was given to you on a Sunday morning, you know, and they would give you that cup of hot milk and to drink, sometimes straight from the cow. And it was very fresh, as I said, and we drank it. And milk was always associated as a, almost as an antidote for any type of gastrointestinal issue. And it was also attributed to that spicy foods and stress cause ulcers or is the main cause of ulcers. And that is actually false. It is actually false. And we know now medically that according to the American Association of Gastroenterologists, the vast majority of ulcers are caused by a bacterium called Helicobacter pylori. And pylori. Or the H. pylori. And that is why now when you do have the symptoms that may be suspicious of some form of ulcer or gastritis, your doctor would normally do either a blood test or stool culture to look and see if this bacterium is in your body. Because this is the bacterium that is closely linked to causing ulcers. And that is the Helicobacter pylori bacterium. So it's not spicy foods or stress. Yes, spicy foods can augment or can cause irritation to the lining of the stomach, creating more inflammation. And so therefore, the if the inflammation exacerbates or gets bigger or wider or more severe, then you have more ulceration, and subsequently you can even end up having bleeding happening inside. We also know that some ulcers are also caused by the overuse of NSAIDs, that is non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Drugs like ibuprofen, diclofenac, indomethacin, aspirin, and the list goes on. Pyroxene. All of these drugs, which are often used to manage pain and inflammation, if they are used for long periods of time or misused, like even prednisolone, they can actually increase your risk to developing ulcers. And before we take the caller, milk should not be used if you've been diagnosed with peptic ulcer, because milk itself, when it is metabolized or broken down, it converts the lactase, turns to lactic acid. And you already have hydrochloric acid in the stomach. So that in itself potentially creates more problems for you. So if you have ulcerated stomach, the gastroenterologist normally would give you a list of foods to minimize or avoid, and you would recognize that milk and dairy products is included on that list. But we're going to take this caller. Good morning to you, caller. Thanks. All right. Feel free to call. The numbers are 449-3095, 449-3096, 449-3097, 616-4257. And of course, you are welcome to connect with us if you reside outside of Dominica. That number is 305-432-9624. Let me give you that number again, 305-432-9624. These are the numbers that you can connect with us here live at the studios of the big station, Q95. Trudy, I suspect you may want to share one.
Yes. The one that I had in mind, let me call this one, is that if you are pregnant and you have a craving and you touch yourself some place on your body, that the baby will have a birthmark. And I know people maintain that this is true, when in fact, this is a big untrue.
It's untrue.
Myth.
It's not correct.
So, birthmarks are caused by some irregularity in the skin. The red ones, like what we call the strawberry birthmarks, are caused by some blood capillary issue in the skin, the upper levels of the skin. So it would result as a, you know, a red birthmark. And those blood capillaries, of course, carry blood. So the redness is associated with, you know, the blood patch there. A black birthmark, or brown, it shows up as black or brown on our skin, is as a result of an accumulation of the pigment melanin. So something happened and the cells that produce that melanin, they overproduce and they cause a little splotch in that area of melanin. But it has so essentially a birthmark is a skin defect. It happens spontaneously. It has nothing to do with the mother and what she is craving, what she does or does not eat, where she touches her body during her pregnancy. So this is one of those myths. You know, I always find this a little amusing, and people hold it steadfastly that they don't want to mark their child.
That's
so they will say, you know, they if they have a craving, you know, they need to satisfy that, or if they touch themselves, they will mark the child. That's what we say. But this is wrong. This is not the reason for the birthmarks on the babies.
I love that one. Very good one. Now, you should put ice on a burn. And a lot of us do that.
Yes.
You have done that. You're in the kitchen and steam burns you. For you open the pot and bam, steam burns your arm. And right away you open the tap, or you get cold water from the freezer and you put on that. Is this should be done? Should this be done or not be done? And the answer is false. It should not be done. What is recommended is room temperature water. And again, water should be used as the first line treatment for a burn. However, it has to be room temperature water. Cold water or ice should not be used, merely because it causes blood constriction of the skin, making the burn deeper.
Wow.
Yes. And again, too, I should say that toothpaste nor flour, or what we call white flour, should be placed on burns. Sometimes that people have done that, people say that they have heard that you put toothpaste. Yes, on the burn. No. The active ingredients in the toothpaste can be very irritating. It can be an irritant in that case, and could cause secondary infections to the burn. The very same thing with the flour. It could actually block the pores of the skin, creating way more problems. And so you don't take flour, white flour, and put on a burn. You don't put toothpaste on the burn. If you do have some triple antibiotic, you can put that. If you do have some zinc oxide, it is one of the good treatments. You can put that on there. But to say using toothpaste, no.
Interesting. I had never heard of toothpaste for a burn, but what, and I guess maybe I'm thinking about it, it might be the menthol kind of cooling aspect. People maybe figure it will cool down the burn. So maybe that's where that arose from. But what I had heard in my teenage years was to use toothpaste for acne. And Carlton, I'll tell you, I tried it and burnt my skin with toothpaste. So I know, and everybody was telling me, you know, put the toothpaste on those pimples. Lo and behold, I had to end up at Jolly's Pharmacy for something to remedy those chemical burns I got on my face from that toothpaste.
Yes.
We have a caller. I see we have a caller trying to call in.
Good morning, caller. Thanks for calling.
Hello, good morning, Carlton and Judy.
Good morning to you.
How are you all?
We're doing very well.
Carlton, I got my voucher. I was satisfied. I made use of it.
I am glad.
No. What I call you for body burns, I hear you saying you should not put cold water or so on a burn. But what I want to find out is, can you put your hand on the pipe or so?
Mm-hmm. Yes, the room temperature. Yes, so the pipe water is normal, but not cold water from the refrigerator.
Okay, because I wanted to get that clear. I can remember a doctor long, long ago said, if you get burns, put your hand water,
yes.
water.
Yes.
So anytime I get a little burn, yes. when I'm cooking,
yes.
I rush to the pipe and I put my hand under the pipe,
yes.
I think. So I wanted to get that clear.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
yes. Not cold water or ice from the refrigerator.
Yes, mm-hmm. but pipe water
but
is fine.
But pipe water mm-hmm. is fine. Mm-hmm. There is another one. Tilt your head back if you have a nosebleed. Mm. And I remember my mom used to do that because I had a sister who suffered badly with nosebleed. And at the time, I guess that was the standard. That's what people felt was the better thing to do.
Aspirate that blood.
And I see we have a cholesterol discolor before I continue. Good morning to you, caller. Thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning, Carlton. I'm
Trudy.
Away from you guys, but listening in the U.S. I listened to what you said about the burn. And funny enough, I got a small burn from a pot like a couple of games ago. And my 16-year-old niece told me to put toothpaste on it. And I did put the toothpaste. Believe it or not, it really didn't show up. And it didn't get any worse. I really, like, it disappeared. I didn't see where it go. I didn't know how she knew about that remedy. I didn't even know about that. I would normally use the cold water, but then I'm learning.
Yes.
But there is something else I called about. I know you haven't mentioned it in your program, but I'm up in the U.S. since I've been up here. My eczema is bad either during the summer or it also comes during the winter,
mm-hmm.
which I know either way is the weather affecting.
Yes, yes.
But the products I have used up here, one has been steroid ointment, one has been non-steroid, but nothing has worked. But I do have someone in Dominica right now, so I'm just calling for any suggestions that you may have that you guys a product that you would recommend so I can get the person to bring it up to me.
Okay, tell the person to check me. I will swear.
I will do just that.
Yes. And I will have a conversation with you on the phone. Okay, no problem. Yes, and so we're talking about the tilting of the head back
if you have
a nosebleed. Should that be done? And that's something that has been done for years. And it should not be done.
Mm-hmm.
You are actually potentially creating complications in this situation. What can occur if this is done? If you've been doing that, you could cause choking.
Mm-hmm.
So you could choke on the blood.
You can aspirate the blood.
And yes, and you could also irritate the stomach and cause severe vomiting. So you could end up, you know, the blood gets into your esophagus and gets down into the stomach, irritate the stomach, and you begin to vomit blood. So what is normally recommended is that the tip of the head, you tilt the head slightly forward. So you tilt the head slightly forward. Then you use your thumb and your index finger to firmly pinch the soft part of your nose. Like almost like you shorten the nose, right? Like if you take a bad smell on you,
mm-hmm.
right? So you tilt the head forward, then you take your thumb and your index finger firmly, you pinch the soft part of your nose. The soft part between the tip of your nose and the hard part of your bones, that is the area that you tilt, that close to the bridge. And then you pinch that for at least 10 minutes interval. You release it, then you pinch again for another 10 minutes. And it will help to stop and control the blood, the bleeding. Usually that is caused by the rupture of the blood vessels mm-hmm. in the nasal cavity, and it's very common in children because children pick their nose very frequently. There have always been conversations as well. That the weather could also cause more nosebleed. So when the weather is very
hot and dry,
that could occur more because, again, too, you have more dryness of the nose, and even in winter too.
Yes, in the cold season. If you're exposed to,
you have that happening too. So this is what is recommended in a nosebleed. If the bleeding has not subsided or stopped, then you would have to go to the ER or see your doctor after 20 minutes of trying to arrest the bleeding.
I see we have a call.
Good morning to you, caller. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, Mr. Carlton, and good morning to your guest.
Good morning. Well, not my guest, my co-host.
Oh, your co-host.
Yeah, she's been with us. Trudy Christian, yes.
Okay. I want to ask you a question.
Sure.
Before, when you get a carbuncle, it comes so big, your parents would tell you, put some stuff on it so that it can get it soft or burst and pull off the stuff.
Uh-huh.
If you don't have to go to the pharmacy to get something to put on it, what you should use? And if you give me the answer I am not looking for, I will give you the answer. I'll tell you what I was doing whenever I get a carbuncle.
Well, generally with carbuncles, what is normally recommended as first line treatment would be magnesium sulfate paste or basilic ointment or basilic leaves. Sometimes you put it on the carbuncle. It draws up the pus from the carbuncle. Once the pus is out, then you can use a triple antibiotic or neosporin ointment. Sometimes, according to the size of the carbuncle, oral antibiotics are also used along with something for the swelling and pain. But this is generally what is used.
Okay. What I was using now is, I used to use blue soap and sugar. I mix the sugar with the blue soap, and I put it on a piece of cloth, and then I rest it on the carbuncle.
Okay, well, I've not heard of that one.
Another one again I used to use is ripe pawpaw.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was working. It do works.
Okay, I haven't heard of either of the options that you've outlined. However, again, we still have to be cautious about underlying conditions that the person may have. So if it's a diabetic person, then they are more prone to have a major infection because their glucose level might be high. We also have to think of somebody who may have sickle cell anemia. That is another risk factor. Somebody who may have circulatory problems. You may have a poor circulation in the area. So there are somebody with a skin condition. So there are underlying factors too that may have to be discussed before the other alternative treatment that you might be saying are used.
Okay, because what works for me don't work for you.
That's it.
Thank you. The composition is very important this morning, and good vibes. Thank you very much.
Thank you too, sir. Thank you. I see we have another caller.
We lost that. Okay, here we go.
Good morning to you, caller. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Good morning. And I have been listening.
Good morning to you.
And I'm talking about myth. I think that most of the times that people talk about myth is something we know long ago. Even in our poor parents that never had the
formal education,
like what we have now, because everybody know, like you, for instance, into your medicine, science, and those things. Before, we never had those.
I think we lost that.
So I think to myth is a mindset, because most of the things that you all are saying, which is not true, it have worked for people.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it did work, and I'm speaking from a woman perspective because some of them have worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so I think now we just have to figure myth as a mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And it works. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because in a sense, it's the power of the mind, you know. Because a lot of times, if you really believe something, I read a book many years ago. Think until. It was not something about think, but it's almost like what you think. If you think of something all the time, you become it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it becomes part of you. You understand? And so that's why sometimes you have amazing fake doctors. We've seen cases like that where that person may have begun, you know, medical school, then dropped off and told themselves that they're a doctor. Mm-hmm. And actually go about
healing
doing
people.
Yes. And sometimes they even have done well.
You see, but the issue with that and with what Nicola mentioned and this thing about, well, this thing worked for me, is just like what I mentioned with the toothpaste. Sometimes people, because of whatever reason, it could be coincidental. It could be, you know, the thing was going to cure anyway and you took this and it wasn't even related and, you know, you saying that what you took worked. But the problem is then recommending to another person and insisting to another person that this is what works. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the other person, of course, not experiencing your good luck. Mm-hmm. So this is where, you know, this thing about myths is, it can be dangerous because mm-hmm. I could be, you know, something could have coincidentally just worked for me. And then I'm insisting to this other person, that is what mm-hmm. you need to do, and preventing the person maybe from accessing a better method.
That's true.
And the person now has a worse outcome mm-hmm. than I did. Mm-hmm. So this is why, you know, the dispelling of the myths is important, because it's not everybody that will have the same good luck mm-hmm. or the same outcome with some of these things that we are, you know, we are discussing.
And you said it really well, because we've seen situations like what you've just described, very, very, very prevalent with the sharing of medications.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So somebody is diabetic and neighbor, they suspect or they feel that the neighbor sugar high. And mm-hmm. they, you know, the metformin, I have metformin there.
Let me give you some.
Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. so we see things like that happen. You know, somebody has a gripe stomach and you just, you know, you may have had something and you share it and you don't know the main cause mm-hmm. as to what is happening with the person.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good point. We have another very common one, and it's kind of controversial because I too have read up a lot about it. Do eggs cause heart disease?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Yes, can eggs cause your
and
cholesterol?
You know, this story has been changing with this, so this is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
uh-huh.
Do eggs cause heart disease? The answer from, according to Harvard Medical School, they're saying that answer is false.
Mm-hmm.
That eggs do not cause heart disease. So according to the Harvard Health, a publication of Harvard University, whole eggs don't cause heart disease, but excessive saturated and trans fats do.
Okay.
Right? So you might have fried the eggs, but you use Dove butter.
Okay.
Because it tastes much better.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or you fry the eggs in oil, vegetable oil. And after you fried it, you decide you're going to maybe still have some. Maybe you have some something with mayonnaise, mm-hmm. and you
put
see what
happens. Cheese on
right?
there,
and you decide you're still having sausages with it,
mm-hmm.
right? You're still having sausages with it. So yes, eggs have lots of cholesterol, and they're high and high LDL blood cholesterol, which is the bad cholesterol, increases the risk of a cardiovascular disease. But recent research have found that the cholesterol in our blood doesn't come directly from what we eat. It's manufactured by the liver, stimulated by the saturated and trans fat in our diet.
Mm-hmm.
That is why the statin drugs, they work
on the liver. Yes.
Yes. So heart disease are more likely caused by combination factors such as eating lots of fatty, fried, processed foods, being overweight or obese,
genetics,
enough exercise, smoking, fatty liver, drinking lots of alcohol,
mm-hmm.
and of course, if you have other underlying conditions, mm-hmm. because you could end up having a secondary cause. You could end up having a secondary cause why your cholesterol level is high. So, for example, you may have a cancer of the liver, and because of that cancer of the liver, your cholesterol level keeps shooting, right? And then you're wondering if it's with your diet, but it's actually a tumor that's mm-hmm. there that's causing the cholesterol to rise.
Mm-hmm. So this is a good one, Carlton, and the research about eggs, you know, it has been all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know, they used to say you should only eat one egg.
I think it was twice a week.
Egg twice a week, or mm-hmm. you should eliminate eating the yellow of the mm-hmm. egg. So this is something that, you know, people maybe still hold dear. But moderation is key, you know, but eggs have been redeemed as not being as evil as they once were thought to be, yes. because there was a lot of medical advice against eating eggs. Mm-hmm. I remember there was a craze long ago with the egg beater, like the artificial, like you could buy it in a little box,
yes.
and it was felt to be more wholesome than a full egg. Uh-huh. But they've been changing. It's the same thing with coconut oil too. That's another discussion. Mm-hmm. You know, changing the what is recommended mm-hmm. with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you know, someone might come with the argument about commercialization
mm-hmm.
and who is purporting what and what is their motive for pushing what, because you find the vegans or people who do not do
any animal
products may have a totally different perspective. So it's one that I've always said to people, if you consume eggs, like I do, it's not something I'm going to have every day. And if I do eggs, I would prefer to have it boiled.
Hard boiled.
Yeah. Right, hard boiled.
It's the healthiest preparation, though.
That's mm-hmm. it. It's the preparation.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes. Carlton, I have one, mm-hmm. a simple one, but I think it's important just in terms of our awareness. So oftentimes people, if they have very dark circles around their neck or a very dark neck. Yes, people will say the neck is quass, that's there. The person is not practicing correct hygiene.
Uh-huh.
They're not scrubbing their neck. Oftentimes too, sometimes even young people,
mm-hmm.
very black necks, and people will, you know, or parents or older people will advise them on scrubbing the neck.
Mm-hmm.
But the darkness around the neck can actually be an indication of insulin resistance.
That's
so this
true.
Dark neck, mm-hmm. which is called acanthosis nigricans, is a very easy to see indicator mm-hmm. that somebody is insulin resistant.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a predisposition. Well, being insulin resistant can lead eventually to type 2 diabetes. Mm-hmm. So if somebody is insulin resistant, that means their insulin is not as sensitive as it should be. The body has to be making more and more insulin to get the same effect. And eventually the insulin stops being, you know, it doesn't work as it should. So this dark neck thing, mm-hmm. if you notice it, it's, you know, something that you should seek further a medical attention for or advice for, because it might not just be an issue of hygiene. So if you know, you really do scrub your body, or you do try to remove this darkness around the neck, and it's there, it's somewhat permanent, you know, even dark armpits as well, and dark elbows. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So very, very easy to see or visualize signs of insulin resistance, these dark marks. I see.
I like this one, because it is something that I have intercepted quite a bit. I just recently, a mother came with a child with that same situation, mm-hmm. recommended an HbA1c test, and it came back, the child is pre-diabetic,
a very
young girl.
Yeah.
And again, it's a weighty child.
Mm-hmm.
So these are things that we are cognizant of. And again, we want you to know as well that if you do see these things, that you begin to inquire, particularly if diabetes is in your family, there's a family history, a parent has diabetes, or you know, or a sibling has diabetes, then it increases your risk factor.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller.
Yeah, we lost that caller. Yeah, so you can try again. Of course, our on-air numbers 449-3095, 449-3096, 449-3097, and 616-4257. If you're trying us from overseas, the number is 305-432-9624.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So
let's take a break.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Oh, we have a caller. Let's take the caller before the break. Good morning to you, caller. Thanks for calling.
Yes, caller. Good morning. I heard you earlier on talking about cholesterol, and I wanted to get a comment from you about cholesterol and oats. I have found in a positive way that cholesterol oats assist with bringing down your cholesterol, although they say it is supposed to be starchy. So can you comment on that? Because I had a personal situation where oats was recommended by someone,
mm-hmm. Okay.
and it helped with my cholesterol. So okay. I just want to find out
right.
what to share your opinion on that.
Right. The benefit of the oats in that case is the fiber. Fiber, foods that are very high in fiber has been attributed to reducing the bad cholesterol, which is the LDL, the low density
lipoprotein.
Right. And so if you do the oats, preferably using low fat milk, some people do no milk at all. Or they may add all the high fiber with that. So, for example, they might add prunes, they might add raisins with it. Then that is where the benefit is seen, because of the fiber levels, fiber helps to reduce the bad cholesterol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he mentioned people say it's starchy, which is true. So you see, it's something can be good for one thing,
yes.
and you know,
so if you're diabetic, yes, right,
and can be, you know, not so good for another thing. So if you're watching your blood sugar levels,
mm-hmm.
oats, yes, is high in starch. You want to kind of try to make sure you eat it earlier in the day at least, so you can metabolize it, you know, throughout the day. But I always, doctors have recommended not to have high starchy meals late at night. So if yes. you're diabetic and you're trying to, you know, moderate your glucose, you should think about that. We have another caller on the line. Caller, good morning.
Good morning to you, caller.
Hi, good morning. Good morning. Health vibes. Interesting conversation again.
Thank you so much.
Trudy, I'm Carlton. I'm listening. Very interesting.
Thank you.
I just want to add something to your conversation for you. Slightly shifted in the food and away from the meat. So here's what I wanted to say about the food sometimes, and I think you hinted to that, Sultan,
mm-hmm.
that sometimes certain companies who push a certain product will have studies done and will push their study as conclusive data to sell the product. And even to the Food and Drug Administration sometimes get it wrong. They have to alter the food pyramid ever so often to educate people on what they had put out there maybe 10, 15, 20 years, or they have to make revise the information, because every food or every person, like you also spoke about earlier on certain things, you might get a birthmark or whatever. It is not the same. Every medicine don't work on the same person. Every food don't react on everyone the same way. So the products that we're talking about that we eat, the things that we consume, a lot of times, that's why they tell you it's good to eat locally grown food. And even so, when you eat local food and organic food, you got to really be careful, because you still could have somebody putting too many chemicals in the food or the soil or whatever may cause that food to be altered, and you as a person ingesting the food can end up with problems, and may not end up with a problem because our body chemical makeup might be slightly different. So one of the best things to do is consumers, I would say, to always be studying your body, how you feel, what you eat. For those who don't like certain animal products, or might eat certain animal products that's grown on grass-fed and natural organic food. It's an ongoing process. So what you all just mentioned about the eggs and stuff, I've been following these things for a while, and they said that you shouldn't consume the yolk, like Trudy said, then you can, and then you can't. It's confusion. But if a food is naturally grown in a kind of more natural setting, you could consume it. If a food is fed too much chemical, hormones, and all these things, then you got to be careful of it. But so far, you all been giving a lot of good information. I just wanted to inject that to let people know that they themselves must be careful and be pay attention to your body, like the water consumption you talked about earlier.
Thank you, caller.
Your body tells you when you need water.
Yes.
But you don't want to neglect your body and not drink water or drink too much.
Thank you, caller.
Interesting, fellas. Guy and girl.
Thank you.
Fellas,
thank you.
For the boys.
Thank you, caller.
Well, I'm listening. Interesting.
Right.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Because we're trying to, we have a few more that we want to leave. We want to leave with you before the time comes up. There is one. Do people only use 10% of their brains? Is that true or false? The answer is false. The answer is false. So neurologist Dr. Barry Gordon of Johns Hopkins School of Medicine says that the idea that we only use 10% of our brains is so incorrect. In fact, he says it's laughable. He said, the Johns Hopkins website goes on to explain that the brain is a complex organ controlling thoughts, memory, emotion, touch, motor skills, breathing, temperature, hunger, and every process that regulates the body. So while it's true that all parts of our brains are not all being used at once, that doesn't mean that these areas are never used. Different parts of the brain controls and coordinates diverse activities of the body. And so that 10% that we may have thought is correct is indeed incorrect.
Carlton, that one can open up a whole conversation. I think you should move to the next one, because I could debate with you on this one, that although it's not only 10% that's being used, some people are not using the full capacity at all times. So, but the brain is a very powerful organ. It's just that it's, you know, a lot of people sometimes not utilizing it to the capacity that it has. But
so
that is a very debatable one, Carlton. I think you should go to your next one. Your next one. Because the kind of things I read and see,
I know.
I think you should move to your next myth.
Okay. A person with a concussion shouldn't be allowed to go to sleep.
Okay.
And I have seen that too, where somebody, you know, acutely, you know, gets a concussion because maybe they bonk their head somewhere, and they'll tell you to sit up, you know, and that type of thing. And the researchers are saying that this is actually a myth. It is not accurate. Before I actually go on to expound on it, let's take this caller firstly. Good morning to you, caller. Thanks for calling. Yes, good morning.
I listened once on the radio. One was saying that the Webster Dictionary has 300 words that is wrong, badly spelled. You hear me?
Yeah, I heard you.
So when you say that, when you say about 10% of the alone has been used, I remember what the person I listened on my by that radio name, the one you love, you're there.
Okay.
And I want to call and tell you that because you said 300 words been wrongly spelled in the Webster dictionary.
Okay. Thank you, caller. Thank you. We have to run. All right. So again, a person with a concussion shouldn't be allowed to go to sleep, and that has been said many times. And the answer is false. A concussion is a mild traumatic brain injury caused by a sharp blow to the head or body that causes a sharp back and forth slouching motion in the brain, disturbing its activity. However, because a concussion can't be seen on any medical imaging, the severity of the concussion must be diagnosed by the symptoms the patient is presenting. In the past, it was widely believed that it is dangerous to allow someone with a concussion to sleep for fear that they will slip into a coma or lose consciousness with no one knowing. Popular thoughts was that concussed individuals or people with the concussion should be woken as often as every 2 hours or not be allowed to sleep at all. However, because rest is the way the body heals, waking someone or denying them sleep is counterproductive to healing. So it is actually recommended that the person
be allowed to sleep.
Yes. The person can be allowed to sleep. You just want to monitor the individual.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, lines are going, Carlton.
Yes. Let's take this call. Good morning to you, caller. Thanks for calling. Sorry. Good morning to you. Good morning to you, caller. Thanks for calling.
Good morning to Carlton and Trudy.
Good morning.
Carlton, I don't know if it's a myth, but something happened to me yesterday. I was drinking water. And as you would say, passing my wrong throat.
Mm-hmm.
And I was choking. No, it's a good thing my son was there, so he kept tapping me on my back. What is the right way when a person is choking? You should help the person.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. You have me on the spot. I know the answer. I'm just trying to think of the chronology or the steps in doing it, because that's a first aid kind of question.
I mean, if he's choking on a solid object, the Heimlich maneuver is what is recommended, to do those deep thrusts, you know, and try to push that object up the because it would have gone down the trachea instead of the esophagus. That's what happened. For water or liquid, what she said her son was doing is not wrong.
Yeah.
Because the tapping on the back, it helps to clear the your respiratory passages. So that tapping, maybe he was intuitively doing it, but it's actually a mechanism that's utilized. But I know the Heimlich maneuver, which is something I do not know how to do professionally. I've seen it demonstrated, but I have never gone for a first aid class or CPR class to actually learn how to do the Heimlich maneuver properly.
Same as I.
Yes, but that is the guaranteed, or not guaranteed, but that is the recommended way to address choking, is the Heimlich maneuver. So holding the person from the back and using your fist to provide those thrusts. And for a child, it's different though. For a child, you have a different mechanism.
Let's take this caller. Good morning to you, caller. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, Carlton. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning to you.
Yes, good morning also to your guest.
My co-host.
Yeah, sorry.
Yes.
Your co-host. Just a moment ago, I was listening and I heard your co-host mention about insulin resistance. Else, if you'll tell me if it's true or if it's not true, is it caused by the type of food we eat, especially the processed food every day on a daily basis? Then this.
Okay, we got caught up. What was his question?
He was asking if insulin resistance is caused by the food that you eat. high processed food.
It's lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
And it's not just about the food. It's lifestyle. It's, you know, yes, your diet, mm-hmm. your genes as well.
Genetics, yes.
Right, genetics. Whether it's something that you would have inherited. Are you active? Are you active? Are you someone that active? What's your weight like?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is your weight like? Do you keep you a good weight? Are you a smoker? You know, do you drink or consume lots of alcohol? So all of these are other factors that also will interfere with your insulin levels.
And the sensitivity of the insulin. Mm-hmm. And there are some medical conditions too that are associated with insulin resistance or that reduction in the insulin sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
Polycystic ovarian syndrome in lupus. Females is mm-hmm. one, yes. So there are some conditions, and as Carlton mentioned as well, of course, the lifestyle, the diet, mm-hmm. et cetera. But a prolonged period of insulin resistance and it's not being addressed will eventually, for many, lead to type 2
mm-hmm.
diabetes.
We are taking our last call for the morning. Good morning to you, caller. And you are gone. Yes, it's 11:32. How time truly flies. Let's take this last one before we leave. Good morning to you, caller. Thanks for calling.
Carlton.
Yes, good morning.
You were supposed to correct the old man, because I actually said the food belongs in the wrong fruit.
Okay. I yes, yes.
All right.
Yes. Let's take this caller quickly before we go. This one, I see one more light. Yes. Good morning to you, caller. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, Adam.
Yes, good morning to you.
Good morning, Trudy.
Morning.
I just wanted to address the Heimlich maneuver because to me it's very, very important. Somebody could speak in a restaurant, essentially anywhere. So, just to say the Heimlich maneuver is performed, you take your left hand or your right hand into your left hand in. You close your thumb into your palm, you close your fist, and you put the other hand over it, and you place those your palms together. So one hand closed as a fist with your thumb inside and the other hand over it at the base of the stem, so at the base of the breastbone. Not over the breastbone because you want to cause any damage to any bone structure. And you place it there and you do some vigorous thrust to get it.
Okay.
As much as you can, try to help the person to get it.
Your quality wasn't very consistent though. We were getting
you're breaking
in and
up.
Out, yes.
But oh, it's breaking up?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes. But we picked up a gist of what you're saying. I think
right.
it's something that we can all look on
right.
YouTube.
And, mm-hmm.
And just so you know, for the infant, you put the infant over your knee and you do the thrust, not with the whole hand, but with your fingers. And then you turn the infant over and you do some back blows. So you alternate between the thrust over the knee because you want support for the baby. Over the knee, you do the thrust, and then you turn the baby over to the back and do back blows, upward back blows to try to help the infant to expel whatever is obstructing the airway.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Thank you.
So thank you so much, caller.
Yes.
I appreciate that.
We did have a show once, Carlton,
yes.
with paramedic
mm-hmm.
and she did go over these things, but it's always worthwhile to revisit and continue the education, so maybe we can have a follow-up
yes,
in
definitely.
The future on these emergency protocols, emergency procedures.
Definitely. So it's 11:35 and we have to go. I know that it was a very interactive show this morning. The information, we do hope that now that you know, you will do better and you will share the information as well with your friends, your loved ones, your family. Again, as always, your health is indeed your greatest resource. Preserve it. Take care, everybody, and have a good rest of the day and remainder of the week. Take care until next week, Wednesday, where, if God permits, we
yes.
will be with you again for yet another episode of Health Vibes. Bye-bye. Take care.
Goodbye.